Penguin Random House Audio presents The Buried, an Archaeology of the Egyptian Revolution. This is the author, Peter Hessler. Part 1. The President. Worship the King within your bodies. Be well disposed towards His Majesty in your minds. Cast dread of Him daily. Create jubilation for Him every instant. He sees what is in hearts. His eyes, they search out every body. The Loyalist Instruction, 19th century BC. Chapter 1. On January 25th, 2011, on the first day of the Egyptian Arab Spring, nothing happened in Abydos. There are no demonstrations, no crowds, and no problems for the police. By that point in the winter excavation season, only one unusual incident had occurred. Earlier that month, a team of archaeologists from Brown University had uncovered a hole that contained two small bronze statues of Osiris, a small stone statue of the god Horus in child form, and exactly 300 bronze coins. The archaeologists had been excavating a series of tombs that had been looted thoroughly during antiquity, and they had neither expected nor hoped to find such relics. For Laurel Bostock, who was directing the dig, the immediate reaction was mixed. Along with a thrill of discovery, she felt a wave of nervousness, because now the team had to deal with more intense issues of security and bureaucracy. The local police contacted their superiors, and an official from the Egyptian Ministry of Antiquities arrived. There was a great deal of paperwork to be filled out. Over a period of days, Bostock and the others worked long hours, and they painstakingly cleaned, measured, and photographed each of the coins and statues. Then everything was transported to Sohag, the capital of the region. The artifacts were locked in a wooden box that was placed in the back of a pickup truck and escorted by half a dozen policemen armed with rifles. The objects themselves weren't especially valuable. None of the statues was taller than 10 inches, which made the departing procession, the truck, the police, the guns, slightly comical. The coins dated to the mid-Ptolemaic period, between the 3rd and 2nd centuries BC, which is late by the standards of Egyptology. For the archaeologists, the true value of the discovery was its context, because the relics appeared to have been interred as part of some ancient ritual. But this wasn't what people would talk about in the surrounding villages, where the alchemy of rumor was bound to transform the coins from bronze to gold, and the statues from modest pieces to relics as valuable as Tutankhamun's funerary mask. The worst-case scenario would be for such a discovery to be followed by some breakdown in civil order. But there is no reason to expect that this might occur. President Hosni Mubarak had ruled Egypt for almost 30 years, and protests in the capital rarely affected remote parts of the country. On January 26, 2011, the second day of the Egyptian Arab Spring, nothing happened in Abydos. The archaeologists had been working to the west of the local settlements, in an ancient necropolis that villagers referred to as El Menfuna, the Buried. The Buried contains the earliest known royal graves in Egypt, and it's also home to one of the oldest standing mud brick buildings in the world. This structure dates to around 2660 BC, with nearly 40-foot-high walls that form a massive rectangular enclosure. Nobody is certain of its original purpose. The local Arabic name, Shunat al-Zabib, storehouse of raisins, is another mystery. At various times, people have speculated that it was once a depot for goods or animals. Auguste Mariette, a French archaeologist who worked here in the middle of the 19th century, suggested without citing any evidence that the structure had been a, quote, sort of police station, unquote. This theory seems to have been a projection of Mariette's concerns about looting, which has been a problem in Abydos for approximately 5,000 years. On January 28, 2011, in Cairo, on the fourth day of the Egyptian Arab Spring, tens of thousands of people gathered in Tahrir Square, and somebody set fire to the neighboring headquarters of Mubarak's National Democratic Party. In Abydos, the team from Brown University had already returned home, and now another group of archaeologists had arrived from the Institute of Fine Arts at New York University. This group was restoring parts of the Shunat al-Zabib, or the Shuna, as the structure is usually called. The NYU team was led by an archaeologist named Matthew Adams. He was 48 years old, and he had the well-cooked appearance of any Westerner who has spent a career in the Sahara. His ears and cheeks were red, and the shadow of his shirt line had been permanently burned into his neck and chest, a V-shaped hieroglyph that means Egyptologist. Adams's career in Abydos represented an exact parallel with the span of the Mubarak regime. The American first worked in the necropolis in the fall of 1981 as an undergraduate intern. That October, shortly after the archaeological season started, President Anwar Sadat was assassinated during a military parade in Cairo. After the assassination, Mubarak was elevated from vice president to the highest office, and the capital remained stable. Other than an increased police presence, there was no noticeable impact on Abydos. As an intern, Adams was assigned the lowly task of sorting thousands of pieces of ancient pottery. He still recalled the autumn of Sadat's assassination as the most tedious season he ever spent in Egypt. This experience influenced Adams' response to the early Tahrir protests. When NYU administrators began to talk about evacuating the team, Adams resisted. He knew that looting would be much more likely if the foreigners left the dig house where they resided in the necropolis. But on February 1, 2011, at least 200,000 people gathered on Tahrir. Police were abandoning their posts across the country, and mobs had overrun a number of prisons. At the Wadi al-Nutrun prison, in the desert northwest of Cairo, attackers had freed hundreds of criminals, political prisoners, and Islamists, including a leader of the Muslim Brotherhood named Mohammed Morsi. After the prison breaks, Adams decided to evacuate. It took 3 days to arrange a charter plane that would transport the team directly from Luxor to Athens. On the way to the airport, the archaeologists tried to organize a McDonald's run, but one effect of the revolution was that the Luxor franchise had run out of meat. Within hours of the foreigners' departure, looters appeared in the buried. The dig house employed private guards, who typically called the authorities if there was a serious problem. But now the police didn't respond. The guards chased off the first thieves, and a few hours later, at 2 o'clock in the morning, a larger band of men arrived. Their faces were covered by masks, and they carried tools for excavation. They confronted the guards, warning them that they would be killed if they didn't abandon the site. The dig house was managed by Ahmed Regeb. He was nearly 40 years old, a calm, capable man who came from Aswan in the far south. At Egyptian archaeological sites, it's common for foreigners to hire a manager from another part of the country so that he'll be free from local pressures of family and tribe. Ahmed knew that these same pressures also represented his best hope against the looters. Many of them carried guns, but as long as they were from Abydos, they probably wouldn't shoot the unarmed site guards. If outsiders arrived, though, they might not feel the same restraint. For Ahmed, the fear wasn't so much that artifacts would be stolen. After millennia of looting, and after more than a century of professional archaeology, most easily found objects of value had already been extricated from the necropolis. But looters never understood this, and by digging rapidly in the dark, they were likely to damage underground structures that had yet to be properly studied. Many thieves must have heard about the recently excavated statues and coins, because they targeted the site of those discoveries. On February 11th, a government official appeared on national television and announced that Mubarak had vacated the office of president. Around the same time, outsiders began to arrive in the buried, and some of them were inspired by the long tradition of magical beliefs in Upper Egypt. One evening, the guards caught and interrogated a young looter who had come from Naga Hammadi, a town more than an hour to the south. The young man said that a sheikh in his village had performed a divination and declared that treasure could be found in Abydos. Ahmed tried to contact the police, but they remained unresponsive, so the guards released the looter. In addition to having management skills, Ahmed was good with a hammer and a saw. He decided there was one last thing he could do to defend the site. At the dig house, he gathered some lumber, nails, and paint, and he went to work.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?